Great. Well, boy, it's just a real pleasure to be here with y'all today. I know back when we first started about Esau, I never thought I'd see the day when we were up on stage with the likes of a group like this. So it's really a pleasure to have you all here. Thanks for coming.
Absolutely.
Good to be here.
So what we're going to do now for you is we're going to have each one of our panelists give a set of short remarks, and then we'll launch off into some Q&A. We want it to be pretty informal, so we want this to be very informative. There's been a lot of changes in the diesel world, and our first presenter today, our first panelist is going to be Mr. Tom Foulkes. He's going to talk to us a little bit today about diesel technology.
Great. Thanks, Steve. I am here for Alan Schaefer, who is executive director of the Diesel Technology Forum. He sends his regrets. He can't be here. Lots of important issues he's working on in Washington, D.C. at the moment. There's always some kind of an emergency, so you got me. I'll do the best I can with it. I'm the West Coast rep. My area of focus is primarily California policy, so I'm going to be giving you some remarks today sort of through that little twisted knot hole, so bear with me because some of the stuff may be a little bit oriented in that direction. As you can see on the slide, these are the members of the Diesel Technology Forum representing diesel engine makers, automakers, after-treatment suppliers, fuel providers, and so forth. I'm going to start off with just talking about where we've come from. The Diesel Technology Forum was created about 11 years ago primarily to combat the dirty diesel problem that was identified almost exclusively in Southern California along the freeways. What was required, the Diesel Technology Forum is a trade association, yes, but it's primarily an education and outreach organization dedicated to just providing information and teaching folks about what diesel technology actually is. Today, 11 years later, diesel technology is some of the cleanest engine technology on Earth. The stuff that has to be rolling on the roads in California is the cleanest stuff on Earth, and it's a big accomplishment. It's a huge achievement, and a lot of that... Now we go beyond, well, what have you done for me lately, into the category of, all right, what can biodiesel fuel do to accentuate the gains that have already been made and to help sort of steer the dialogue in the policy setting arena. So I'm going to be focusing a little bit on that today. I've got just a few more slides and we'll kind of get moving. About at the end of 2010, so the information is just a little bit over a year old, the Diesel Technology Forum commissioned a study of 300 policymakers and opinion leaders, primarily inside the Beltway, since most of our members are oriented in that direction, just to see what people thought of diesel technology, what their perceptions were they up to speed on what the technology is all about today. And some of the information that we found out was that if you take a look at, you know, what should we be investing our money in? Clean diesel technology was right up there along with electric vehicles and hybrids and so forth. But biodiesel was thrown in as well, meaning basically biodiesel is a very important ingredient in the sort of soup that makes up the policy regarding what we ought to be spending our money on. So in listening to your previous speakers talking about the RFS and talking about cuts, talking about investments, biodiesel is, without a doubt, in the mindset of the people who are making these decisions. So you don't have to hump on them too much because they are aware of you. They're there. You just have to make sure they cut you less than they cut everybody else because that's pretty much what the game's all about. See, opinion leaders are, we don't need to convince them about the gains that the technology has been making over the past 5 to 10 years. Most of the people who set policy are very aware of how clean diesel technology is today in terms of emissions, environment, and so forth. Interestingly, you juxtapose that against the so-called opinion leaders, folks in the media, think tanks, environmental organizations, and they're still kind of holding on to some of those, well, yeah, it's clean, but not really. They've got some attitudes that they just won't let go of, and it's one of those sorts of aggressive resistances to knowledge that we bump up against sometimes in that arena. This is where I have to look at my notes because I just can't read this eye chart, but when we measured what people know about what are the good things they think about diesel technology, diesel is very fuel efficient. You can see there's not one single thing that jumps off the chart. There's nothing that gets over 50% of the mind share. But here's what sticks with people. Diesel is very fuel efficient. Diesel engines are much cleaner than a dozen years ago. That message has really sunk in. Diesel engines are very durable. Diesel engines are very powerful. What are some of the big negatives that stick around? Well, we still got that problem, the pollution problem. Diesel engines still pollute. I think we can attribute a lot of that to the legacy diesel that's on the road today. Because they last so long, you have a whole lot of really old stuff running around on the highways that still belch black smoke, and people see that, and that's what they hold on to. People think it's costly, it smells, it's noisy. And here's one of the things that really jumped out, which really biodiesel, I think, has a lot, could have a lot of impact on, and that is they do not reduce our reliance on fossil fuels, really. Well, if we fold in the biodiesel message along with all of the other clean technology messages that have been we've been talking about, can you really hold on to that to that bias? Can you really continue to say biodiesel doesn't contribute to our reduction on petroleum? I don't think so. Moving on, just wanted to give you sort of where are you selling diesel vehicles? This is from R.L. Polk. Data taken from the, I think it's the 2010 model year. Most diesel vehicles, cars, passenger vehicles are sold in California. The next highest state is Texas. You can see the list here. Pickup trucks, Texas, next California. So that's where your market is. These are the states where you're selling the most product. And obviously, we think where biodiesel could have a big impact in terms of the policy dialogue. Sales trends are, without a doubt, way up, and I do need to just to look at my notes here. This is brand new information, came out within the past month. Sales of new clean diesel passenger vehicles in the U.S. increased by 27.4% in 1 year. This is over the 2010 model year. 32% of U.S. consumers said in 2011 that they would consider a diesel vehicle. This is up from just 12% in 2006. So in a five-year period, the attitude about diesel has changed significantly, and a lot of that has to do with the back crosstab results of this information are just fuel economy when people are looking at that. The math problem that most Americans have when they look at the price differential between gasoline and diesel at the pump, it's still tough. If people can actually, though, do the math, they'll figure out that they're saving money because the fuel economy of diesel is so much better. And so at some point, we'll get the people who can't do the math. The take rate, when a diesel vehicle option, when a diesel powertrain option is available, 33% choose the diesel. And this is clearly evident with VW, with the Jetta. You know, the Jetta TDI Sport Wagon is an 80% take rate of diesel over gasoline. And more new diesel announcements are being made all the time. And I didn't want to get into, you know, every single model here, but by OEM, Chrysler's coming out, General Motors, they've got the diesel Cruise, which is going to be a great big deal because the gasoline Cruise is a really good seller right now as it is. The diesel Cruise option was more or less announced by GM primarily because of the new CAFE regulation of 54.5 miles per gallon that the OEMs have to get to. I believe it's by 2025 or maybe sooner than that. Please, somebody help me out. Is it 2025? I think it's 2017, 2025, something like that. Diesel is, with all of these diesel announcements are driven in a large measure by the new CAFE standards, which is requiring a fleet average to be much higher than it has been in decades. Mazda is the first Asian passenger vehicle manufacturer to announce a diesel powertrain. Mercedes will have 8 diesel platforms on the road in America by 2014. VW's coming out at the Chicago Auto Show in a couple of weeks with the diesel Bug. Now, that little car rocks. That's a cool car. It's a little 2-liter diesel engine. It's fantastic. I mean, they're all fantastic. I'm not a salesperson for VW. It's just really a cool car. This is my last slide. You know, who's driving diesel in California? The big, oh, you're the eco state. You guys are the harshest on regulation, blah, blah, blah. Well, here is the leading, the dean of environmental lobbyists in California is driving a BMW 335D. 36 miles per gallon on the highway. He loves that car. He's just completely evil when he's on the highway right now. The senior fellow for the Coalition for Clean Air, former health officer for Cal EPA, Jetta TDI driver. Tom Kaquette, chief deputy director of the Air Resources Board, the guy who just promulgated the world's toughest emissions, tailpipe emissions regulations 2 weeks ago in L.A. with a clean cars regulation, LEV 3, Jetta TDI driver. Dr. John Balmes, he's the respiratory MD representative on the Air Resources Board, Jetta TDI driver. So there you go. The list of all these cars is on the Diesel Forum website. If you'd like to check them out, you can. Plus, the biodiesel vehicle showcase today in the exhibit hall has also got a whole bunch of these cars.
Great. Thank you, Tom. Roger, you're up next.
Thanks. Hard act to follow. The truck and engine manufacturers represent primarily on-highway and non-road heavy-duty engine manufacturers or vehicle manufacturers. So when we were talking about light-duty diesel a few minutes ago, we're the heavy-duty side of the house, so to speak, primarily. We have 28 member companies. You recognize a lot of the names on that list. Some of those are not diesel manufacturers per se, although I think they all dabble in diesel somewhere along the line. Clearly, some of them are exclusively diesel. We obviously have regulatory requirements that we need to comply with as engine manufacturers and soon vehicle manufacturers. On highway, it's heavy duty useful life requirement is 435,000 miles. That means that those engines being built today need to be in compliance once they've gone down the road 2, 3, 4 years and have already eclipsed that 435,000 mile point. That's for traditional criteria emissions. Greenhouse gas emissions and fuel efficiency are coming on. It's always been a customer requirement, but now it's becoming a regulatory requirement. And starting with engine out emissions, but also going into vehicle dynamics, aerodynamics, and tire rolling resistance, and all those characteristics that impact fuel efficiency for heavy-duty vehicles. And then onboard diagnostics for heavy-duty is in the process of being implemented. It started in 2010, and I think it gets everything in 2013. Non-road has an 8,000-hour useful life requirement. That's roughly equivalent to the 435,000-mile useful life requirement for on-highway. Again, that's traditional criteria emissions. And fuel, regardless whether we're talking about diesel fuel or biodiesel blends, interact with every aspect of that product performance and regulatory compliance associated with these products, both on-highway and non-road. We're heavily involved in fuel requirements, ASTM standards, et cetera, both diesel fuel and biodiesel blends. Obviously, both fuels, all fuels, interact with the emission control system as well as the customer experience with that product. Obviously, the goal of manufacturers is to produce a product that customers want to buy, want to continue to use, want to reinvest in new as that equipment gets older, et cetera. So all of these fuel aspects interact with that experience, whether it's diesel fuel or biodiesel blends. Obviously, we're keenly interested in variability associated with diesel fuel as well as biodiesel blends.
Great. Thank you very much, Roger. Good information. Jim, I think you're up next.
Okay, great. Well, hello, everyone. It's great to be in Orlando, and I wanted to sincerely thank Steve Howell and the National Biodiesel Board for the opportunity to participate in today's discussion. At Ford, we are, extremely focused on meeting the sustainability requirements of our commercial fleet customers. We continually evaluate capability in our trucks and vans to meet those needs. And this chart actually shows the range of alternative fuel technologies that we offer on our commercial vehicles today. Anything from the CNG, LPG, prep engines to the battery electric Transit Connect van. And as you'll see, biodiesel B20 is a very important part of our overall alternative fuel strategy. Today, we offer B20 capability on our Class 2 and 3 pickups, Super Duty pickups, and our Class 3 through 5 Super Duty chassis cabs, and also our Class 6 and 7 medium-duty trucks. So we have a full lineup of B-20 capable product that has a gross vehicle weight range of anywhere from 9,400 pounds GVW on our F-250 pickup to 37,000 pounds on our F-750 medium duty truck. So how did we arrive? How did we get here with our B-20 capability? Well, knowing the importance to our customers, I saw Claude here from Florida Power and Light, and he was one of the key drivers amongst many to get us to provide that capability. So back in 2007 calendar year, we started on the path to look at what would it take to add B-20 capability to our trucks. So we approached customers in California, Minnesota, and New York, and we asked them if we could retrofit their trucks with B-20 compatible hardware. And we tested those trucks for 2 years, and the data and lessons learned from the test program really helped us to arrive at the B-20 capable system that's on our trucks today. And as an example, on those test vehicles, we added a low-pressure fuel sensor to cover for fuel gelling and filter plugging. And that actually was seen on a couple of units. And because the driver was alerted soon enough, they were able to avoid costly engine repairs. So we knew that that was a very important element to include in our production fuel system. So this slide shows the components that were added or modified on our production fuel system for the 6.7-liter diesel engine. Anything from improved gaskets and seals to greater filter capacity to the low fuel pressure sensor. And adding the B-20 capability was a big deal for us. As I mentioned before, biodiesel is a very important part of our overall alternative fuel strategy. It's so important that we proudly display B-20 capability on the badge of every Super Duty diesel engine truck we produce. So thank you, and I look forward to the discussion.
That's great. That's great, Jim. We sure appreciate those comments. And that F-250, that is a heck of a truck. I drove it over the weekend, and it's fast off the line. It's quiet. It's smooth. And I like the power on it. It's a good truck.
I just want to know one thing, Steve. Did you drive it 180 miles plus like Brent did?
No, I didn't. But I did get it up to 90 before my wife told me to slow down. Great truck. Glenn, you're up next.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah, I'd like to echo, you know, Jim's sentiments as well and thank the National Biodiesel Board and Steve for having us as part of this. I think it's a true testament to the work that the National Biodiesel Board has done over the years to have two OEMs that are represented on the panel today to talk about how the industry has helped to pull us forward in our technology growth. So we're pleased to do that. But before I do that, let me just say a couple brief words to introduce maybe Hino Trucks to some of you who's not familiar with our brand. We are the commercial truck division of Toyota, so we're bringing the Toyota way to the commercial truck market today in quality, durability, and environmental responsiveness. In addition to the conventional product line that we offer today in a Class 6-7 product, our customer base can also choose commercial products from our sister companies in Toyota and also Toyota Material Handling, all products which offer alternative fuel vehicles and hybrid vehicles as well going forward. So we're very proud of that heritage and very proud to talk about that today. But really, this isn't really about a sales pitch or a marketing pitch. This is more about our customer and our corporate mission statement. Our corporate mission statement is to make the world a better place to live by helping the people and the goods get to where they need to go safely, economically, and with environmental responsibility, with focusing on sustainable development. So two of those key factors there are really about what we're here to talk about today, and that we're working with the industry to provide products that meet our customers' demands, meet our customers' needs, but provide sustainable options going forward in the marketplace. But we know in the traditional, you know, Japanese sense of Kaizen and continuous improvement that there's still additional work to be done. although the industry, and Hino is as an OEM in the industry, has made tremendous strides with the EPA 07 and the EPA 10 emission regulations to significantly reduce the NOx and particulate matter levels by over 90% from vehicles prior to the emission standards, we know that there's work to be done on the CO2 range. So we're working daily to look at ways to reduce the CO2 footprint of our product in the marketplace today. And we do that really with what we call a five-leaf system. If you look at our hybrid and alternative fuel vehicles, which we've introduced in the marketplace today, we've met the challenge with the EPA 10 emission regulations, and we're the only commercial conventional truck manufacturer in the marketplace today that offers a product that truly meets the EPA 10 emission regulations without the use of banked emission credits. So we're very proud of that fact. Continued idle reduction. You know, there's a lot of wasted fuel and emissions that can be generated through unnecessary idling, so additional controls on the truck to do that. We work very closely with our customers to help in their driving techniques, to improve their driving techniques, to be a more efficient driver in the marketplace today. And then from a green fleet management standpoint, now with telematics and things like that, the computer systems on trucks today, you can provide immediate feedback back to the customers and the driver to help them improve their route efficiencies and make the product more efficient to reduce their carbon footprint. So that's really what we work and focus in on a daily basis. Today we offer a complete product lineup of Class 5 through 7 medium-duty trucks. We offer a conventional Class 6 and 7 product line that's fully manufactured in West Virginia. Later this year, we're going to introduce a Class 5 cab over product line. We'll first introduce the diesel version of that later this summer, and then towards the tail end of the summer, we'll introduce the first Class 5 fully diesel electric hybrid system. Now, we utilize, as part of the Toyota Group company, we utilize about 60% of the same componentry that Toyota does and Lexus does in their hybrid products. So we're able to bring that product to market in a very commercial, acceptable standpoint. In addition to that, all of our product from 2011 models and going forward are capable of using B20. And we see, you know, continued effort from not only the National Biodiesel Board, but our efforts as well, that really diesel and diesel hybrid we see as the most economical and the cleanest fuel option that's going to be available in the foreseeable future. So our efforts are going to be to continue to work to enhance our product offering and to make this a more viable product for the future.
Great. Thanks. Great comments, guys. Here. Excellent work. Thank you all. We'll launch off into a few questions for the panelists here now. And, you know, you can't use biodiesel in an engine unless somebody buys an engine that actually runs on biodiesel. So as you guys are looking at what your customers desire in a diesel vehicle, when they make that diesel choice, what types of things are you seeing your customers really want, and how does biodiesel fit into that picture? Jim?
Okay, well, you know, first they need a truck that's going to do the job. And so, you know, the first thing they come to us for is, you know, what is the payload? What's the towing capability? You know, what do they really need that truck to do? And for a lot of our customers, like the utilities, the energy companies, diesel's the answer for them. And I hate to keep picking on Claude, but Florida Power and Light uses B20 exclusively on their diesel engine vehicles. And so, you know, number one, you need the truck to do the job, but then it really depends on the customer and their vocation, where they migrate from an alternative fuel standpoint and what technology they use. But we find that B20, you know, on our trucks, and I know Glenn sees it as well, is being received very, very strongly in the market. So we're happy to provide it.
So I know one of the big factors as we were working with the OEMs and other engine companies, and Roger, we've been working together for years, you know, one of the questions is there going to be that customer pull? Because there needs to be the technology that we work on in the technical field and then that customer pull. And those two things have to marry together in order for something to work. So how have you seen the customer pull for biodiesel vehicles?
From our standpoint, that's really, I mean, what's driven the demand. I mean, it is a situation where the customers have come to us and said, we need you to produce products that are more carbon neutral and you know, provide better cost of ownership, really, because that's really what it comes down to. At the end of the day, when they're purchasing a vehicle, they're looking for a product that will get the job done, as Jim said, but also provide them the lowest cost of ownership. And more what we're seeing, you know, really in the industry now is more of the environmental initiative. Today, where customers are demanding, you know, the B20s and the hybrid technologies and the natural gas vehicles today.
Great. Well, that, you know, that brings up kind of my next question. It fits right in, and I'll address this one to Roger and then to you, Tom. You know, it wasn't long ago, but a whole lot of people in the industry, maybe those from California, certainly thought diesel was dead. So there's been a lot of changes over the last few years. What do you see as the kind of major changes that have happened over the last few years, and what do you see as the kind of the future prognosis for diesel engines?
Well, I think you're right, Steve. I think diesel was, you know, some people had it in the coffin buried. Some people only had it at the funeral home, but it was headed in that direction. And quite honestly, it's been the evolution of what's been called clean diesel that's really changed that. Obviously, diesel's been extremely critical in the heavy-duty market for a long time just because of the fuel efficiency and so forth. But the dirty diesel perspective that was out there was preventing it from moving down into the passenger car area, even into the light truck area. And it was, from a regulatory perspective, being regulated out of existence because of those emission impacts. But we've seen with the technology that's been implemented over the last several years, now we have particulate emission levels and NOx emission levels that are down in the microscopic level compared to what they were not very many years ago. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, we have the regulatory community turned around to the point where diesel technology is actually leading, not just because it's gotten clean on the criteria emission front, but because of the greenhouse gas fuel efficiency aspect it always had. So we're seeing those two things come together, and it's almost creating a strong pull, if you want to call it that, from a regulatory and consumer perspective to pull diesel forward. And part of that renewable effort is, of course, biodiesel.
Wow, great. So, Tom, what's your cut?
Well, from my perspective, diesel actually was dead and in the ground in California after the 1996 ARB ruling on LEV II, low emission vehicle 2 regulation, which basically required every new vehicle sold in California going forward to be ULEV certified, ultra low emission vehicle. Diesel couldn't do that for a long time. It wasn't until the 2009 model year with the Jetta TDI that diesel sort of had this rebirth in California, and it was able to get to ULEV certified. 2 weeks ago, Air Resources Board just adopted the LEV 3 tailpipe regulation, under which the NMOG NOx combined standard is very tough, but most of the diesel OEMs, diesel engine makers, have said, we can do that. We can get there by 2017. 2025 is ultimately when you have to get there to reach that level. And in fact, diesel has gotten so much better on the criteria emissions standpoint that gasoline direct injection engines now have to be as clean as diesel on the PM reg, because you've got to get to 1 milligram per mile on PM. Diesel can do that already because of its filters. Gasoline direct injection can't, and that's causing a real problem for some of the OEMs. So the future is actually quite bright for diesel technology and for bio, providing that NOx number is really paid attention to, and that everybody really understands that under LEV 3, NOx is going to be tough to get to. So just be aware of that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, along those lines, we've heard a lot about, you know, the hybrid electric vehicles on the gasoline side. What do you see as the future for hybrid electrics on the diesel side?
I'm going to defer to my OEM friends over there, but I think that the main reason diesel was given any love at all by the Air Resources Board was because of the potential for two things. One, the increased use of biofuels. Two, the hybridization. Everybody there wants electrification, and everybody wants the double impact of diesel hybridization because of you just get that much better greenhouse gas emissions performance and that much better fuel economy and everything else. But I'll defer to
sure.
my friends.
Yeah, Glenn, you know, your new applications, you know, tell us more about that.
Well, we're very excited to introduce our hybrid product this year. And you know, hybrid is going to have a very significant place in the commercial truck market going forward in the diesel truck side. It won't be the right application for everything. I mean, it's more of an inner city type product. You know, you have to have the right duty cycle. You know, not a lot of high speed. You know, really, once you get on over the road, the diesel engine, which is a very efficient engine in itself, the efficiency of that will take over. But really where you need the hybridization, the electrification of the engine is in the inner city where you're running at low speeds and really running where the diesel engine is in its most inefficient state. So, you know, we see, you know, numbers potentially even by 2015 to 2017 that the diesel hybrid market could be 15% of the commercial truck market.
Wow. That's really great. So, you know, kind of looking to the future, you know, as we look out on the horizon, you know, and really from a big picture perspective, you know, what do you all feel are some of the major issues and hurdles that the biodiesel industry is going to have to overcome and that diesel and biodiesel or biodiesel and diesel vehicles are going to have to overcome? What are the things that we need to keep working on together to kind of foster that, you know, joint marriage, so to speak?
Well, Steve, I think the probably the most important thing for biodiesel is having high-quality fuel out there. Producers following the ASTM specs and putting a high-quality fuel out there, because we as OEMs can put the best system out there from a hardware standpoint, but if the fuel quality isn't good out there, then there are going to be problems, you know, with the operation. So that's one of the key things. The other thing I would say from an OEM standpoint is when we say B20, we kind of mean it. You know, that you know, really that system has been designed for up to 20% biodiesel. So we really discourage using higher blends just because so much work has been put into those systems. So I think you know, with the fuel quality and you know, observing those percentages, I think there's a great future with it.
Great. Well, the good thing about that is we probably don't have enough vegetables and animal fats to do B20 across the board. So B20 sounds like a pretty good number to me. Yeah. How about you, Glenn?
Well, we look at it really from probably an internal aspect, an industry aspect, and then a public aspect of it. I think the industry aspect is one to continue the regulation to provide quality biodiesel for the products, because, you know, the problems that some OEMs have experienced in the past with people putting their own levels of biodiesel has had a negative impact, a negative image on biodiesel. But I think, you know, those are things that we can overcome as an industry. And I think to Tom's point earlier about, you know, just diesel in general, I think there still is, you know, somewhat of a outside of our industry, you know, you talk to people in the industry and or outside of it and just in the general public, that there still is somewhat of a perception that diesel is dirty. You know, I, you know, growing up in the 70s, we saw the black smoke and things like that. Our kids today don't see that, but they don't necessarily understand the effort that's gone in and the regulations that have gone in to clean things up. And I think as an industry, we need to do more promoting of the fact that we really have cleaned up the industry.
That's a really good point. I think there's some good marriages there between clean diesel technology and biodiesel in that technology and making right. It even greener. Mm-hmm. Roger, we've been working on stuff for a long time. And looks like we're working on it for a while in the future. So from your cut, you know, what do we as an industry need to keep working on?
Well, I can't strongly echo enough the fuel quality aspect of things, whether it's diesel fuel or biodiesel blends. You know, clearly fuel quality impacts everyday operation, and there's nothing that turns people off more than a truck stopped on the side of the road that can't do its mission. If you have any customer concern that drives you to do things, and it doesn't take very many, that rumor goes really fast if there's a problem in the marketplace. And you can turn something from a real positive to a real negative without any trouble at all if you're not paying real close attention to fuel quality. Because there's right. So much fuel that goes through these products, every bit of it needs to be good. It can't be 95% good. It's got to be good.
Indeed. Indeed. And I think we've heard quality a couple of times up here. You know, you're from California, Tom. I'm going to give you the last word here on our panel. But from a California perspective, tell us a little bit about what we need to work on in California.
What they said.
Excellent. Well, you know, folks, we could sit up here all day and talk about this, and it's our time is almost up. But fortunately, the Biodiesel Vehicle Showcase starts at 12:30 in the Expo Hall. It'll be our most exciting vehicle showcase event ever, featuring, among others, Brent Hayak and his F-250 land speed record, 182 miles an hour. I don't think I'm going to try and go 182, but Brent can do it. He's a good guy. A NASA H-1 Hummer. We have a real game changer in the 2012 Hino hybrid truck, which runs on 20% biodiesel and electric power. And, gentlemen, I'd just like to thank you for being a terrific panel. Let's all give them a round of applause. Thank you.